Add WFAN to your contacts to talk New York sports with us at 888-808-1019. Powered by AT&T Business.
Yes, sir. Inside the 10 o'clock hour on The Fan in New York, Keith McPherson, your nighttime host, taking your calls, talking sports. But right now, I have a guest, and I haven't been having too many guests on because I want all the time and I want to give you guys the time. But this is a time to bring back Disha Thosar. She's a writer. She covers the Mets and the Yankees a little bit for Fox Sports, and she's just been around the game, and she's somebody I respect and a friend of mine. Welcome back, D.
What's up, Keith? Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, I'm watching the game, the Met game. They're up 12-2, so we'll wait on the Mets conversation. And I've been kind of, you know, putting it out there with the grimace stuff. The Yankees, I have a little bit of breaking news. I saw Hubs from Barstool found a picture of Oswald Peraza in New York City today. And he said, would seem to be the move to get another infielder in there. And Max Goodman just quote tweeted and said, yes, Oswald Peraza being in NYC today is relevant with Anthony Rizzo's injury news. So we just spent the first 3 hours of my show talking about whether the Yankees were going to pick up somebody DFA'd like a Jose Abreu, or J.D. Davis just got DFA'd, or whether they were going to make a trade, or whether they were going to call up Ben Rice. What do you think that they're going to do here with Anthony Rizzo going down for the next 6 to 8 weeks and more than a few issues in that infield?
Yeah, I think they have to wait a little bit. I don't think it makes too much sense to panic and make a big move for somebody like an Abreu or a J.D. Davis. I think those options would be interesting for the Yankees. They can possibly make it work with very little to lose, but I think just having a sort of a panic decision, they can hold off. They have a big lead. This was a bad series in Boston, of course, but they're going to fix those issues. I think, of course, all those steals on the base paths was the biggest takeaway, more so than Rizzo's injury, because he has struggled all year, and really he said he's been close for most of the second half of the season so far, and really nothing had changed at the plate for him. So if he hadn't gotten injured, I'm not sure how much longer of a leash they would have even given him. So I know for some Yankees fans this isn't the worst injury, but I think they got to figure something out, at least with Peraza. If he gets a good runway, that's huge. He really has to start making the most of his opportunities now, because he can really take it and run with it if he can.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm right there with you as far as like, try and solve this issue in the meantime in-house. Don't make any quick decisions to pick up a veteran outside the organization or bring up a young guy that's never played in the show and say, yep, it's your time, young man. It's time for you to, you know, join this first place team that's in the middle of a battle with the Orioles this week. Like, no, I don't think this gauntlet that they're facing in June is the time to throw a guy like Ben Rice into the mix. Like you said, I think Oswald Peraza, he's been, you know, up. He was in the ALCS 2 years ago. He's been up and down. And I think when you add him to the mix, we obviously know he was a shortstop coming up. He's played third base. He could even play second base. And that makes me believe DJ LeMahieu will now be the everyday first baseman. And there might be some type of platoon situation between Oswaldo Cabrera at third base, Peraza, and maybe even getting Gleyber Torres out of there. So let's talk Gleyber for a second. This is where I'm at as a Gleyber Torres fan, as somebody that watched the kid come up. I always reference that he was the MVP of the Arizona Fall League when I first was hearing about Gleyber Torres. He's supposed to be a stud. They talked about him being the likes of Fernando Tatis Jr., Ronald Acuna Jr., Juan Soto as the next young faces of baseball, and it just never materialized. They wanted him to be the Yankee shortstop. He's not that, and now he's just a liability at second base with his glove and not giving you enough at the plate, and I think this is the end of the rope for Gleyber Torres. He's been a problem at second base, and I don't think there's any way the Yankees bring him back, but do you think there's a shot that they can trade him for anything at the deadline? Like, I just think that it's run its course. It's over.
Yeah, I mean, I really feel for Gleyber. He's always mentioned in trade rumors almost annually. He's been floated around, even when he's been a productive hitter for the Yankees. I know fans like to get on him, but he's been an above-average hitter at the plate for all these consecutive seasons. I think he got aided a little bit in 2019 with the juice ball. He had 38 home runs, which now sounds wild to think Gleyber could get 38 home runs, but really he's been solid up until his contract year. And I think that's a little bit what's happening across town with Pete Alonso. I think of some of these players, really, it's so mental in baseball. And if you let these things get to you, they're going to get to you. And I had high hopes for him in the beginning of the season when he was buddy with Juan Soto. All of spring training, I saw them together. Soto was really giving him a lot of tips. I thought this was going to be a huge season for Gleyber. And really, it's a little bizarre what's happening. I think even his defense, it's funny, it's better this year than last. It doesn't seem like it, but that's kind of his all-around play. So, yeah, I think the Rizzo injury does give the Yankees a little bit of room to play around. I think they have to now trade him. I think there's going to be teams interested for sure. He's proven that he can be consistent besides this year, a little change of scenery. I could see a team definitely going for him. Not sure what kind of return the Yankees would get back, because they do need a second baseman in case Peraza doesn't work out. And that's not a great market right now either. We're talking about guys like Jonathan India potentially, who could be a good fit, but that's just really taking a chance. So it's a little disappointing that this whole Gleyber run hasn't worked out for the Yankees. If it is the end of an era, I think you have to give him props up until this point for really sticking with it. I mean, fans get on him. He shows up the same every day. He was highly touted, like you said. That's another point with the Yankees organization, that there are so many players that come up, which we hear so much about. Volpe's working out this season, but really beyond Judge, there was Gary Sanchez. He fizzled out. This is happening a lot to them. Peraza could be the next. So that might be what to look at next if Gleyber is really traded away this summer.
Oh, yeah, there's a long list. Yankee fans can rattle off Miguel Andujar, Greg Bird. Like, we could just go through the name, Clint Frazier. There's so many guys that were supposed to be something and never materialized. It is what it is with Gleyber. And I mean, I don't know what's going to happen. But last thing on the Yankees before we transition to the Mets, we're on the phone with Disha Thosar. She's an MLB reporter for Fox Sports, covering the Mets, covering the Yankees, covering the entire game. You know, there's a lot of talk about the Yankees bullpen, specifically Clay Holmes as the closer. He's the closer. He's the guy. They changed his intro so that they make the stadium dark when it's a night game. I still don't know the song that he comes out to. I think I Googled it and looked it up. It doesn't matter. It's never going to be in one of my playlists. But he's the guy. He's the closer for the New York Yankees, and he's one of the better closers in baseball. But he's just, I don't know, he's not Mariano. So Yankee fans are not satisfied with him. I expect Cashman to make moves at the deadline, but I don't think that they're going to find a better closer. Maybe they find another option. But what do you think about the Yankees bullpen, the Yankees adding to it, and what they'll do with Clay Holmes being the last guy to get the ball?
Yeah, Clay Holmes is not the problem of the Yankees bullpen. I agree with you. His song, I mean, really puts me to sleep. If it works for him, it works for him. He's top three closer in the league right now, so sure, go for it. But the problem with the Yankees bullpen is they don't have enough left-handers, and Caleb Ferguson isn't really working out. He's had a good couple of performances the last couple of outings, but besides that, they need some lefty help, and who I really think will make sense for the Yankees, and I think Cashman should go for, is Tanner Scott on the Marlins. He's not getting enough save opportunities in Miami. Certainly the Yankees are not going to be the only one going after him, but I like how calm, cool, and collected he is. Really, he barely ever gets rattled. He just had one bad appearance against the Mets, who've been on a roll, so that could be a different conversation. But they really have to center around a setup man that will make going to Clay Holmes feel better. There is some shakiness, but I think it is overall just an overtaxed bullpen, and it's really not even Boone's. Everyone gets on Boone, too, for his management. I think he's doing a solid job. They're just running out of dependable options. So in that way, yeah, they definitely need help. Bullpen's going to be, every contender adds a relief arm. It's going to be a hot market. I think they have to go for someone like Tanner Scott, or a Mason Miller could be great if he gets strikeouts that quickly. He's been so dominant for the A's. He's definitely going to be traded. I don't know if the Yankees would go for him, but he could be a good fit too.
Yeah, I just was saying, they played 13 games in 13 days. Like, I don't know what people expect. The bullpen is somewhat banged up. It's in flux. It's ever-changing, ever-evolving. It is what it is. But that's a good segue to the Mets bullpen, as I see Adam Ottavino warming up. I don't know if we're talking enough about the Mets bullpen since Jorge Lopez threw his glove into the stands, since Edwin Diaz has come back, right? The way you lose games, the way you blow games that you have a lead, is your bullpen not holding. The Mets bullpen has been holding. And I tip my cap to Carlos Mendoza as well as David Stearns, because they said they have standards there. And if guys aren't producing, they're not playing, and they have made some changes and sent some guys packing, and now they're getting the results that they want.
Yep, exactly. And you said it, Carlos Mendoza. It reminds me of Buck Showalter's first season with the Mets in 2022. That was when they got 101 wins and got to the wild card, the playoffs, for the first time in years, because he could just hit the button. Diaz would come out. It was like a video game. The most dependable closer that year. I've never seen anyone as dominant, maybe since Mariano. And that they just lost that. Ever since Diaz has had issues, he had a shoulder injury, he was really in his head. Now he's coming back strong, and that really is the key to this bullpen. Everything else falls in line when you have someone as dependable as Diaz back there. You can't blame Mendoza. He was trying to do the best he can, and for a first-year manager, I think he's doing really well. But yeah, this bullpen situation when he was gone, the Mets were leading in the eighth inning or later, the most in the league, and gave up the most losses, blow-off losses after that. So they really needed to figure it out. It's good that everything's coming together. More than the bullpen, I think what's working for the pitching staff is the return of Alvarez. It really goes under the radar how much in charge he is back there, but the entire pitching staff just feels settled when he's calling a game. So now he's back from injury. Everything is kind of working out for this Mets team right now.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned him, because my next question was going to be, what's the biggest cause of change? Is it Grimace throwing out the first pitch on June 12th, or is it Francisco Alvarez coming back, Edwin Diaz coming back, the lineup changing? There's a few different ways you could go with this Mets team. The team meeting that they had, I think, was huge. J.D. Martinez and him going crazy, hitting a ball out. You know, what do you think it really is? Maybe Francisco Alvarez is the answer.
Yeah, I think it's a little bit of all of it. I like that you mentioned Grimace, because really, it's silly. We can make fun of it. But the Mets franchise is a team that is built on their quirkiness, their weirdness, their odd, they're the lovable losers. They have to lean into that. I mean, that is just their identity until they prove otherwise. Mm-hmm. And that's sort of what they're doing. And I liked what J.D. Martinez said during that team meeting that they had a few weeks back, was the pressure's on the rest of the league now. The Mets can play loose, and that's that veteran mentality that really helps a team like the Mets. They're kind of flailing. The core players have had a different front office every season. That's not helpful. You can't really form any sort of identity that way. They just play for a different GM every year, what a different GM wants. And now you have someone like J.D. Martinez coming in as a hitter who's a veteran. The last few years, the Mets had pitchers who were veterans with Scherzer and Verlander. And sure, maybe that helped the pitching staff, but this offense really needed to be grounded and centered, and that's sort of what JD's doing. And then everything else is falling into place. Of course, Lindor has been on fire. His OPS has really picked up. Vientos has been a good spark now that they made that decision of really going with him over Beatty. So everything's coming together. I think they're starting to relax. They're starting to just remember who they are, and I think it helps, but the rest of the NL is just trash right now. Like, they just have so much room to play with. They're so close to even the wild card. It's early, it's still June, but that's got to be a sigh of relief, even just looking at the standings and knowing you're not as out of it as you think you are.
I just was thinking of something from over the weekend that I blanked on, and it came back to me, because I've been talking about how finally the Mets are taking advantage of the universal DH. Finally, they actually went out, bought a bat, and that guy is coming through. And it's like, oh, what do you know? Actually going out and finding a DH, a professional hitter, can come up clutch, literally win you some games. We were going through the names of, like, Dom Smith, Daniel Vogelback, Darren Ruff, and I couldn't think of Tyler Naquin's name. That name just came back to me.
Yeah, that goes back to the front office, right? Like, now that they have someone in charge who they just fully trust, like David Stern, it makes it easier. Plus, he is making the right decisions. That was such a smart move to get JD. And really, at the buzzer, it was late into spring training, and that's sort of why he even came late. You can wonder how different their season would have been if JD was on the lineup on opening day. But now that he's here, this is exactly what they needed to do. They finally have a hitter, and really, I think fans 2 weeks ago were expecting JD to, that's it. This is his final couple of weeks on the team. He's going to be traded at the deadline. They'll get something good back for him. No, if the Mets keep playing like this, he's not going anywhere. And he's the type of player that, even he's healthy and he's hitting like this, he can power them all the way to September contention. So I think this is all working out. I think Mets fans should take deep breaths and just trust that it might work out after a really, really sloppy and hard and painful beginning.
Okay, last thing for you. What do you see? You see the Mets, you know, speaking of the deadline, you see the Mets being buyers or sellers. You see this thing continuing where they're able to get above 500, challenge for that wild card, and at the deadline they go shopping, or do you see that this is just a flash in the pan, as a lot of Mets fans saying, they're sucking us back in, it's not real, they're not good, it's just a, you know, one good week, and, you know, maybe that, you know, they'll get to the deadline and they'll have to punt again like they did last year and sell off?
I think there's just too much to leave on the table if they sell. Like, this is David Stern's first deadline with the Mets. He has the opportunity to shape the future of this organization. And guess what? Steve Cohen is still the owner. He's still a billionaire. And he's still passionate about this team going all the way. And I'm sure he's liked what he's seen these last couple of weeks. So as of now, I definitely see them being buyers. They're in a good position because they have a bunch of one-year rentals. So even if they don't sell, they're fine. They're not going to get too much back for these players if they were to. The Pete Alonso is the big elephant in the room, but I don't think they're going to go there at the trade deadline. Even if they were more than, if they were 20 games back, I still really don't see him being traded right now. I think they should just wait and see what he decides in the offseason. Pete might be surprised by the offers he's getting. They might not be as high as he thought they'd be, and they might just end up hanging on to him. So I think they're in a good spot. I think they're going to go maybe buyers, but I definitely don't see them selling. It's more of like a stand pat or just like one big pickup. Yeah. I could see that happening.
It's a business. They're getting fans to come to the ballpark now. The team is winning, and the weather's warmer, and you don't want to break these Mets fans' hearts by trading Pete Alonso in mid-July. You want to keep them there. And then let the future be whatever it's going to be. Because like you said, Steve Cohen's still a billionaire. If he decides he wants to keep Pete, he can outbid everyone.
Yep.
Great. Hey, great having you, everyone. This is Disha Thosar. Follow her at Disha Thosar. She writes for Fox Sports, covering the Yankees, the Mets, MLB. DT, well done. Thank you for joining us tonight.
Thanks so much, Keith. Anytime.
Manning takes the knee of the New York Giants. The Super Bowl 42 champion.
When this happened, you talked about it on The Fan.
They knock off the mighty Patriots 17-14.
When New York sports happens, talk about it here. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
Oh, yeah. Still rocking for like another 90 minutes. Which is nothing. It's a sprint, not a marathon, a 5-hour KM to AM. I remember I've worked so many jobs. It's funny, I did a live last week, and I was showing off my like studio room, and I have this like scrapbook of, you know, just all the places I interviewed, different ID cards, even like if I had a little printout at like Google or NFL or Foot Locker, like I've saved those things to just like remind myself like what it took and where I had to go and, you know, how close I was to some things that I thought were going to be it for me and they weren't. And, you know, I showed that and people were, you know, asking me about my work history and they were like, yo, you worked a bunch of jobs. Tell us your work. Like I started going all the way back to some of the jobs that I worked. Like I worked at Food Town for one pay period. And I couldn't hack it, yo. I wasn't allowed to wear my hat. I wasn't allowed to be on my phone. I just was working the cash register. And I couldn't kick it there all day. Shout out to you if you do. I was much younger. It was early 20-something. I don't even know. I think I was between transferring or back home or something and couldn't do it. But, you know, shout out to you if you're working and you're listening to The Fan. You know, shout out to the drivers and Uber Eats. Shout out to the fact that that even exists. Where if you have a car and you have the time, you can get in your car and make some money, drive in and dropping off groceries, dropping off meals if you don't want to deal with different people because people can be a wild card. That's another thing. Be safe out here, man. I've seen some wild stuff already pop off. I've heard some wild stories. Somebody actually popped out of their car, tried to fight me. It didn't really get there. Like, it just was like... I just basically backed dude down and told him, don't be stupid. There's cameras everywhere. Like, you know, people, it's the summertime. You know, people are crazy. And we're in an area where there's so many people. And everybody's destination is more important than yours, right? Everybody's got to get through this stop sign or this stoplight faster than you and cut you off. And there's road rage. And It's just, madness on the train. So just, you know, be safe out there. Keep grinding out there. It's another summer, and I wish you the best through it. 888-808-1019. Keith McPherson on the Fan. Going to get back to the calls doing this job. Let's go to Josh in Passaic. Josh, you're on the Fan.
Hey, Keith, what's up?
You know, talking the talk. About to. I didn't even bring home my. I was trying to get back to the phone. So 1 second, Josh. What I was saying is, when I had these jobs, I wouldn't do the last hour mark, Josh. And you'll learn this as you're 16 now. You're about time for you to start working, young man. Unless your parents got it hooked up.
I do with school, Keith.
Oh, so, well, when you work and you've got like a 5-hour shift or an 8-hour shift, don't wait till the last hour. I always used to wait till the 90-minute mark, and I would count down those 90 minutes and just have like a 90-minute power through to get through the job. I couldn't even wait for the last hour. It was always 90 minutes for me.
Okay, my countdown just starts when I roll in there.
So you got an A. What do you do? What do you work? Where are you working? How do you work?
No, I'm talking about school. Counting down to school's over.
Oh, I'm thinking you got a job through the school.
No, I only do one job a year. I do a camp one day in the summer, on a Sunday, and I think last year I got like $600 after it. It came out very well. Everybody liked it. I do it once a year.
$600 for a week?
One day.
$600 for the day?
I have it worked out pretty good. It's a special camp, one day a year.
If they need a guy to fill in.
Yeah, it's like 20, 25 kids, $35. I take $100, $200 expenses, but it whatever came out, I ended up with $600.
Wow. My first job I ever had, I worked at a Jewish camp called Camp David in my town. It kind of went through the school because all the janitors were hired by Coach P. Shout out to Coach P, who I used to train with. I would love to see Coach P now. I'd love to show Coach P what I've done with my life. But Coach P gave me the job because he would work with the football players and the basketball players and the baseball players and the wrestlers that needed a job. And I was just pushing a mop and changing garbages and cleaning up bathrooms and cleaning up the cafeteria when I was 16, 17, and 18. You know, those were my summer jobs. And I think the first check I got was like $400. I thought I was rich, cash. And I think I made like $500 a week there, never $600.
Do you have any great moments there? Any like great memories from
there? Back then I could dunk. So I would show off in the gym and I would dunk, and all the kids would be like, Black janitor, can you dunk again? And I'd be like, yeah, no problem. And I always used to wear a Yankee hat. So all the kids would be like, Are you a Yankee fan? I'm like, yeah, I'm a Yankee fan. I'm not just wearing the hat. And, we were allowed to play dodgeball against the kids. I dominated in that. I tore some kids up throwing the dodgeball. And it was a good time, man. We had golf carts. We could ride around the whole Ocean Township Intermediate School facility. And, you know, the quote that I use on the Fan when I say, don't piss on my head and tell me it's raining, that came from Coach P. Because one summer we got the key to the, like, gym coach's locker room office area in the boys' locker room. And, you know, like three of us hid out for like half an hour just to get out of the sun and get out of working. And he got word that we were in there and he caught us in there. And the first thing he said was, don't piss on my head and tell me it's raining. And we all ran off to get back to our post to work. And, you know, it's just things when you're a kid and cell phones weren't that good. And, you know, you got to work a summer job. Those memories stay with me till now.
Yeah, my camp, I don't really have those amenities of any dodgeball, any golf carts. I'm just making sure these kids stay there for 4 or 5 hours. Just make it all home safe.
Oh, you're a CIT, you're a counselor in training.
No. I mean, this is just at my house and it's a lot of my neighbors. So I got to make sure nothing goes too wrong, or I'm left to, you know, hide in my house and have these people are out.
Oh, I see. Okay, interesting. Well, at least you're getting bread. $600 for a day. There's a lot of people listening that would take you up on that job, fill in for a day to make $600.
I wanted these. A lot of the mothers told me I should do it the whole year, the whole 2 months. But you know, it's like there's a limit to what I can do. And I just told my mother, and she tells him like one day is enough. I get the money. I'm like, if I wanted, I could do full. But also, there's much I can't do. I'm gonna have to do new stuff. And you know, this day I just run the same schedule, but now the kids remember it.
When you get older, you're going to have plenty of things to do at work. So one day a week to make $600, that's solid right now.
Well, a year, but I guess for a week, I guess for a regular person, I guess it's not so bad.
Yeah, and you're far from regular, Josh. What you got for us?
So with the Mets, since when they actually do so bad, I don't really take it so bad. I don't get so upset. So I'm going to be fully optimistic, even though I know there's a huge chance they're just going to crater back down. I'm loving this right now. I just put in my mind, I'm like, if they get bad, so what? I'll just go back to what I was doing the last few weeks. Just enjoying the moment right now. And this team is great. More than 10 runs, two nights in a row. Francisco Lindor's a hitting machine.
20 hits in the eighth inning.
McNeil's. Even with this bullpen, I think 10 runs. I don't know if there's any team that I don't remember last time he was about 10 runs. It might have been like a playoff game or something like that. But Adovino's been pitching shutout innings, and McNeil, he's making plays. I don't hate just seeing his face there.
Right.
He's supposed to make up for that a lot. Right as Alonzo's hitting it. Even Marte finally made a nice defensive grab, though. You know, an inning later, he just lets it bounce into right field. But you know, with that body of his, I'm fine when you're up by a few runs. So as of now, right now, I'm loving this, and listen, I'm hoping for it to continue as much as it can. And the one issue is there's still seven teams in front of them, but a lot of the teams are also playing each other. So if they won this series, they'd at least go. They'd at least move a few places up in the standings. If the Cubs, well, they could play in the Giants.
Can't worry about those other teams. Right now, the Mets are controlling what they can control. They just scored another run in the top of the eighth, added another hit. So now they're up to 21 hits, 13 runs. That's an 11-run lead. You feel pretty good about the bullpen.
And it wasn't a trash pitcher. And that was funny, Keith. Did you see what Scherzer said earlier today at all?
About the difference between Texas and New York?
No, I found it very funny that he said Steve Cohn's doing a great job. I wanted one of the porters to ask him, so if Steve Cohn's doing a great job, why are you here right now?
He was all complimentary. He had nothing but compliments. He spoke highly of his time in New York, and he went on to say the only thing different between Texas and New York is in Texas you drive with the gas pedal, in New York you drive with the brake.
I like that, but I just don't understand why I said Steve Cohn's doing a great job.
Because he is.
They should have told him, what are you doing here then? He said that because he probably was one of the main reasons, you know, it didn't turn out so well. He had a bad year in the beginning of last year.
No, Steve Cohn is doing a great job for Max Scherzer. Max Scherzer won another ring. He literally sent him to the right destination, the one destination to win another World Series ring. Max Scherzer's got nothing but good things to say about Uncle Steve. Thanks for the call. Appreciate you, Josh. 888-808-1019. Yeah, why would Max Scherzer have a bad word to say about a guy that paid him all that money for nothing and granted his wish last year? He said he wanted to be on a World Series contender, sent him to the World Series winning team. Why would you say anything bad about the guy now? He wasn't as complimentary and nice on the way out, but now what's the point in talking down now? Let's go to John in Lincoln Park, New Jersey. John, you're on the Fan in New York.
Hey, Keith, how you doing?
Good. Thanks for calling.
Fantastic. Hey, want to say one quick thing. Thank you so much. I never got to say thank you before, but thank you so much for doing that Phil Simms thing and meeting my nephew. He was the most ecstatic kid in the world. Thank you so much for that.
I was paid for it. You don't have to thank me. Thanks to WFAN. And Fanatics and Nike Football and the Dick's Sporting Goods. Yeah, I didn't mind getting up to go hang out with Phil Simms and Nick Mangold and talk football, and it was great meeting you guys. I always love that. I hope we continue to do more things where fans can meet the host so you can see who you're calling into and who you're listening to every day.
I hope so, too. But I just want to say thank you for taking the time. I want to get back to a little NBA Finals for you.
Mm-hmm.
Why is it that the league has it out for the Mavericks right now? I don't understand why every single call for Boston seems to be a foul, a shooting foul, but yet for the Mavericks, it's a floor foul. And then on top of that, every single time the Mavericks go on a run, oh, foul, foul, foul. I don't understand it. Why does the league have so much bias against Luka?
Because
and then, please tell me to respond. I just got one more thing to say about
because
that.
Because he's a crybaby, because he was critical of them, because all he does is complain. So when you do that, they have a target on you, and I don't know. Him and between him and Kyrie, they've made some enemies. I don't feel bad for them. They're getting absolutely smoked right now. This game,
but it's absolutely fine when LeBron James does it. It's like, look at Embiid. Embiid gets at least 15 free throws a game. Giannis, same thing.
Yeah.
I mean, the only reason why the league hates him so much is literally because he's point guard Shaq. He is literally 6'8" and gets punched in the mouth. I don't know if you're watching the game right now. I have never seen more fouls on one man in my entire life.
Yeah.
It's absolutely
ridiculous.
They got to
build a better team. It's not the refs' fault. They weren't beating the Celtics regardless of even if the refs had that.
They would have won game two. They would have won game three. First of all, when he fouled out, that was absolutely ridiculous. For God's sake, Jaylen Brown charged hard. You can say that his leg was back, but his body was safe.
No, that was a proper call. Luka went out super sad in that game. He embarrassed himself.
So if you even want to go off of that one, what about the other five fouls? They are so ticky-tack. The first three series, Clippers, Thunder, and Wolves, you could do whatever you want. Guess what? There were no. I don't think one guy other than Goldberg had more than three fouls. So I don't understand why you can play defense during the playoffs, but now in the NBA Finals, you can't touch anyone. The Mavericks' special on defense was the fact that you could actually play hard-nosed defense. Now it seems like there was a foul called in the first minute of the game on Luka.
They were never beating the Celtics. Thank you for the call, John. It was good to meet you and your son and everybody that came out to the Dick's Sporting Goods then. The Mavericks, the refs, they weren't beating the Celtics. The Celtics have been the best team in the NBA all year. They have a ridiculous team. As soon as I saw the Brooklyn Nets play the Celtics team, I said, who allowed this? Who allowed them to put this team together with Drew Holiday and Kristaps Porzingis? Like, who allowed them to get Marcus Smart up out of there? Like, I don't know, man. That's why Embiid said, did the Bucks give the Celtics a championship? Yeah. Yeah. Because the Bucks thought that they were making the big splash move, getting Damian Lillard, and the guy that they actually went to get to win a championship the last time, Drew Holiday, who still got it. They thought he was expendable. Yeah. Well, you give him to the Celtics, and that's the piece. Along with Kristaps and some other guys off their bench, and Devin White and Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum, and I know. You can talk about Peyton Pritchard or Al Horford or whoever else. Like, Joe Mazzulla is about to be an NBA champion. Like, Joe Mazzulla is about to be an NBA championship-winning head coach. The Boston Celtics are bringing another parade back to Beantown. And as much as we cry about who's going to get it done here, as much as we talk about who's going to end the drought here, there are 30-year-old fans who have seen the Patriots win 6 Super Bowls, have 6 parades. The Boston Red Sox win 4 World Series and have 4 parades. The Boston Celtics win 2 NBA Finals, 1 parade, the next one coming up next week. And the Bruins win a parade. That's insane for one city, where if you just pick all of the teams in that city for almost half your life to be a parade year. 888-808-1019. 30-year-olds they're coming up on 13 parades in Boston. Insane. If you were born in 1994, you would have been old enough in 2001 to remember that Super Bowl that the Patriots won. And that parade that they had. And ever since then, there's been 13 other championships, I believe. 1, 2, 3, including that one, 13 championships, and including the one that's about to be celebrated tonight. So it's not the refs. It's not Luka. It's not like the refs are. How many times do you hear me say the refs are trash standard across all sports? Get me the robo umps. We've got umps betting on baseball. Gerrit Cole just got to get a taste of what the challenge system is like. I saw it last year in Seattle at the All-Star game. It was great. It added something to the game. I'm the type of fan, I'm not in a rush to get out of the game. I'm not showing up to the ballpark hoping that, you know, my time in the car, which I usually spend over 2 hours in the car, like, there and back. Like, I'm not the type of fan in a rush to get out of there. So, the challenge system to me, with the pitch clock, the challenge system will probably add another 10, 15 minutes to a game. So be it. Because it's electric when you see a player in the batter's box, which now we see all of these. All right, the Yankees, perfect example. How many times have you seen Judge, Soto, Volpe, Verdugo, Rizzo, these guys look at the ump like, come on, man. Well, if you could throw your hand up to challenge that and prove the ump wrong, where there's so many times where it's not even close, it would add something to the game and the feel of the game, because they have the same way we see Yes Network's technology of the strike zone and where the ball is in 3D, then go all around. They can put that right on the big screen. It's coming. Give it a couple years. It's in the minor leagues. It's coming. Back to the phone we go. Eeny, meeny, miny, mo. John in Brooklyn, you're on The Fan in New York. Hello.
Hey, Keith, what's going on?
You know, watching the Mets put up 14 runs. The Grimettes, they're dominant. They refuse to lose. They may never lose.
Yeah, I hear you, Keith. I want to get to my baseball point, but just really quick on the WNBA. I heard you talking about it before. I was a little upset, like, at your take, meaning it's clear that it's because she's this new white girl is taking over the league and it's getting all this attention.
No, don't put words in my mouth, John. I'm right here. I didn't say anything about her being a new white girl. I didn't say anything.
No. I didn't say you said that. I'm saying my own thing now. I'm saying it's clear because it's natural that it's just people get really upset that. They've been playing in the league for so long, and suddenly this new white girl gets all this attention as opposed to them. You know, it makes sense. Like, it's not. I'm not saying it's just about race. It's about more than just race. But
what were you saying? You were upset with my take, though. What did I say that upset you?
No. I was just saying, like you. I thought you come out a little stronger. Like you
no,
say,
because
like, you
know, I don't have the place to. I can't come out talking about something. That, like, I don't watch the WNBA. I've never sat down to see Caitlin Clark's game. I've only seen clips. I know she can shoot. She can pass a little bit. But, like, you know, and I'm not being a male chauvinist or anything. Women's basketball doesn't do it for me. I am not watching women's basketball over any Major League Baseball game. So all of these years have gone by, and Angel Reese and Caitlin Clark and none of these girls. I can't think of the girl that's playing for the LA Sparks that came out of Stanford right now. But none of these girls have been good enough to make me say, I want to watch. So I don't feel like I am somebody that should have thoughts and takes on air or online about the WNBA. But since I'm in the chair and someone calls and asks, I'll share my little bit of thoughts. But I'm not well-versed enough in the WNBA to speak on it. That's why when the caller said Angel Reese needs to calm down, I'm like, what do you mean? What does she need to calm down? Is she fighting people? Is she vulgar? Is she, like, I don't know. My take on the whole Caitlin Clark thing is, once she dominates the league, all of this will stop. Once she's the best player, once she's able to translate her skills from college, which she won't be able to do on her own, the organization has to help her. But once she's as dominant in the WNBA as she was in college, then there's nothing that anyone can say.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying, Keith. Just my Yankees point real quick. Mm-hmm. I just wanted to say, you know, like, we're heavily relying on Heal. You know, Cole coming back, he's a little older from an injury. I'm obviously positive about him and stuff, but coming back. But Heal, he's never pitched this many innings. And I hear other people on the radio, like, saying, well, it's great that Boone is letting him go so long. But, I mean, I hope I'm wrong, but come playoff time, you know, if his arm is shot, that won't be that will be devastating blow to our rotation. We don't really have too many other great pitchers on the rotation. They're doing okay now, but you know, I'm a little worried about Heal. What do you say about that, Keith?
Yeah, thanks for the call, John. I don't see his arm being shot. It's not like he's going to throw 104 pitches every outing. And it's not like they haven't been monitoring him from the beginning. I remember the first time they pulled him and they didn't let him get the win. I got on air and the amount of people that were talking about, oh, they should have let him get the win. They should have let him. Who cares? Nobody cares about wins in Major League Baseball anymore. And nobody's talking about who has the most wins. They were monitoring him from the jump. From the beginning, they're like, that's enough. I think it was his first or second start. That's enough. impressive, but we need you to go in 5 days and another 5 days. Like, you're part of this rotation. You're just coming back. We don't need to stretch you out. We had a number, and that's what I remember. I think the number was 80 pitches. I think he got to 81, and people were mad. I'm like, wait, you knew the number going in. He hit the number, went over it one, but didn't get to finish the inning and wasn't in line for the win, and now you're upset with the Yankees for sticking to what they said they were already going to do? So I don't see him having a dead arm in October. I don't see him having no more bullets, because for that to happen, that would mean they exhaust him through June, July, August, and September. I don't think that's going to happen. I think they're watching this young man, and I think he is very much a young man where he's able to snap back, where he's able, like, he's better than he was before. He's better than he was in 2021. And if they see signs of deterioration, then they'll make adjustments. Then he might miss a start. Then he might only go 4 innings, X amount of pitches. But they're not going to burn him out in the regular season. Cody Poteet just showed you he's ready to go. Maybe he misses a start in favor of Poteet. I don't know. I'm not Matt Blake. I'm not Brian Cashman. I'm not Aaron Boone. But I trust those guys. Jack is in Sea Caucus. Jack, you're on the Fan.
Hey, Keith. Good to speak with you again. Always a pleasure and huge fan of the show.
Thank you. Thanks for joining us.
Absolutely. Well, before I say anything, I just want to preface with how happy and excited I am for the Yankees, best team in baseball. I'm not going to play GM tonight because I think the hardest thing to do is to be Brian Cashman in this trade deadline, because there are just so many options you could do for the Yankees lineup trying to improve them. So what I want to get in on is like what I'm seeing on TV rather than trade ideas. I'm not sure if you covered this yet, but what was the deal last night with the lack of protection against the steal? Was it Jose Trevino's pop time, or, you know, he wasn't even getting a grip on half the throws to second, or was it the pitching being slow to the plate?
It was a combination of everything from what I could see. And like I said, I went to sleep on the game and it didn't really bother me too much. But it was a combination of Stroman and Trevino, where Stroman has been better with Wells and hasn't, I don't think he has pitched to Trevino as much. And it's Stroman's style of pitching. And the fact that they were getting blitzed by the Red Sox, which was obviously a game plan and employed, like they had the right guys, the personnel to execute it. The infield wasn't ready for it. I just think they were ambushed. And once it got away from them, it kept getting away from them. It's in their head. And you know, now you're hesitating to throw down the second. Now you're not transferring the ball from your glove to your hand in time. And you end up having a record night against you.
And, you know, what I really wanted to ask you of is, like, the fact that that was a game on national TV last night, like, is this something that can expose the Yankees to more small ball? And, you know, when it comes playoff time, I don't want to zoom too far ahead, but, like, every inning is a big inning, and the Red Sox are going to lead off runner on every time, and then they'd steal right away. So if that's the case in October, I mean, it's just going to be a bunt or a steal every time. And that's basically, you know, how you get to play,
I mean,
at the end of the day.
Stroman, like, isn't a power pitcher. He's pitching to get soft contact, to get ground balls, and he got hit a little bit. Like, I don't think that's happening with a Gerrit Cole on the mound. I don't think that's happening with a Luis Gil. You know what I'm saying? Like, even Nestor Cortez. Like, I just think that was the matchup, and they saw that matchup, and they're like, hey, we have something we can exploit, and they did. I don't think it exposed the Yankees. It exposed them on Sunday Night Baseball. Yeah, they, like I said, they got caught with their pants down, but I guarantee you they'll be prepared for the next time. I don't think the Orioles can come in tomorrow. Thanks for the call, Jack. I don't think the Orioles can come in tomorrow and say, yeah, we're just going to steal a bunch of bases. Yeah, that's going to be the strategy. We're going to run on them. They're not going to be prepared for it. They weren't ready Sunday night. How could they possibly be ready for our speed on Tuesday? It just baseball doesn't work like that. Okay, you got us this time. Fool me. Can't fool me again. Okay, you got us this time, but there will be a different guy on the mound. Okay, you got us this time, but you had a lead. You were scoring runs. You can play differently when you're up. It's different when you're trailing, right? Go ahead and run into outs when you're trailing. You'll continue to trail. Evan is in Manhattan. Evan, you're on the Fan.
Keith, my guy. All right, so I'm calling about the Yankees, but obviously when we're on hold, so much fun stuff comes up. Not that ridiculous stuff about the calls, you know, and the Mavericks. I mean, they got smoked. But I have a question for you before I get to the Yankees, because obviously when the Knicks are out, and it's exciting to see that the January 15-2 Knicks, which was not even a full squad because we didn't have Mitchell Robinson, could have given the Celtics, you know, all they could handle more than any other team. And obviously we compete with anybody with perhaps. The League West.
Yeah, perhaps.
Yeah, perhaps. Theory. Okay. In theory. So, yeah, agreed. So, but anyway, I don't know. When they're out, I don't care. I don't care. There's 2 minutes to go. Maybe the Celtics just ended up winning it. I know they're up by 20,
yeah,
whatever.
They had 2-3 minutes. It's over.
I could care less, and it makes it easy this year because you tell me, did you look up the ratings? Is this one of the lowest rated?
Like, oh, this is one of the worst ever. Yeah. I actually thought Sunday Night Baseball was going to rival it with the Dodgers and Yankees. It was off by 10 million. Like 12 million people tuned into the early games. I bet you it might not even be 10 million for this closeout game.
Right, especially with the viral world, if you're not like going to watch it, you at least hear about it. I wasn't even sure if they were playing Sunday or if it was Monday. I was like, oh, they're not playing that exactly. Okay, so, and plus Edmonton and the Panthers? Wow, what a year all around. Okay, so Yankees. I hope that it wasn't us. Oh, I'm a Yankee fan. So the most fun thing that's been happening with the Mets, I don't care less about the Mets, is this Grimace thing.
Yeah.
Because Grimace was a legend. I still don't know what he is technically, what animal or whatever. But as soon as I heard Grimace, I got a little bit more interested. That's the most interesting thing about the Mets. Mm-hmm. They win a few games. And listen, they deserve it. They're playing better. I got no issue. Yeah. Not like my Jets.
It's a national thing. They featured him on SportsCenter. If the country is saying this is the Grimace era of the Grimets, then it's done. It's a thing. And they're rolling.
He was such a legend, man. I mean, I'm a little older than you. I'm 50, and I grew up in Manhattan, and this was before, like, you know, virally, like, for any disagreement, cashiers would, like, hop over the counter now. It wasn't like that at McDonald's. And we used to go in as kids and ask what Grimace was and ask to see the manager. You know, we were wise guys. I still don't know what he is. That's the most fun thing. But they win a few games, and they deserve it. They're playing better. We lose two to the Red Sox, which we wouldn't. If Gleyber Torres was aggressive on the 3-1 count and then do a Giancarlo Stanton swing on 3-2 and blow that whole inning, and all of a sudden they think they're in the conversation amplified about Soto. So let me just make my Soto point. Soto, first of all, they wouldn't have gotten him if he's not going to be a Yankee for the rest of his career and that they were confident of that. Number two, as far as your guy Gio or whatever earlier, or Sal earlier today was talking about, if they give him more money, well, first of all, the Yankees will approach or match that money, and I want your opinion, then you can cut me off and give me your opinion, is on top of it, how about the endorsements of being the prime guy, and when Judge eventually, I don't think it'll be for a number of years, starts to fade, then you're the guy. What are you going to get endorsement-wise for the Mets? You're going to get, like, Al's Plumbing on Long Island? You're going to get...
I'll let you go, man. We're up against it. Juan Soto is a Yankee, and he's most likely going to finish his career with the Yankees. The only thing that, I don't know, Gio or Sal or any of these Mets fans can say is we have the richest owner, and he's going to have the highest bid. Money can't buy you love. He can literally look at that offer and say, yeah, I'll take less to stay with the New York Yankees. Keith McPherson on the Fan. Coming up next, my Casamigos big shot of the night, BRB.